This episode of Inspiration Point is brought to you by the Quests and Chaos Podcast Network and the generous patrons over on patreon.com/inspirationpoint. So we'd like to give a big shout out to
Garlic Bread, Eric, and Spike.
And at our Muse $20 level, we'd like to thank
Prostaskius, Leroy, Kate, Jeremy, Jenna, Jacob, Falangor, Cheryl, A Bad Idea, Red Dead Coquette, and Robert Hans.
Thank you for helping us bring a little inspiration out into the world. And now, on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Inspiration Point. I'm Adam, and of course, as always, I'm joined with Tiana Wren. How are you doing?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm on spring break.
Spring break! Hooray!
Spring break! I still haven't finished all my work yet, but...
Taking your time to be able to do the stuff that you want to do is pretty fantastic.
It's very important. I may have blown all of yesterday playing BG3. I started two different honor runs, failed them.
Wow.
And started a third.
Okay.
Because I'm a sucker for punishment, and it's the only way I really derive a lot of pleasure out of it anymore, because I've played the crap out of that game.
You are a Dark Souls player. I was actually just watching a video from H Bomber Guy about Bloodborne specifically, but he talks a lot about the Souls games in general, enough to make me go, maybe I'll try these one of these days.
Oh, you gotta at least play Elden Ring. It's just the greatest thing ever, right? Like, even if you just want to walk around and look at things, it's beautiful.
Right? There is an element of that I find appealing, right? Where it's I'd love to just like exist in that kind of world.
I think that was like 90% of the Skyrim appeal was just being in Skyrim, right? Like,
sure.
You know, you go back and you look at it now and you go, man, without the mods, this game is actually not that deep, right? But It's for its time, the atmosphere that you were getting from it was just, absolutely, gold star,
Yeah.
Like, we just, it mastered that sense of just immersive feeling of being there.
Yeah, I was in university when a friend of mine, I was hanging out in their dorm room, and they put on Skyrim, and, like, they just wandered off in a direction because Skyrim story is ish.
Best way to play it.
and took me up into like the northern areas, and then just had me like look up and look at like the northern lights and the way, like, just the way that it all was. And I was like, I want to get this game for when I move out of Alaska, just so that when I'm homesick, I can go up there and just like sit and watch the northern lights.
Yeah, that was their second idea for a title, was basically Alaska, but they decided to go with Skyrim to stay on brand.
Legit.
I think the working title was basically Alaska.
Not a bad working title, all things considered.
I think it captures the vibe you want, right?
Yeah.
Alaska was Skyrim's mood board. So I just got done with teaching a D&D class, a digital art class, a gaming class, and then, of course, business, so that I can actually keep my job.
You have to add in a little bit of the medicine for the spoonful of sugar.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely like we're hiding a drip of medicine in the box of sugar. But I definitely have a sweet tooth when it comes to, how I occupy my thoughts. And I think a lot of us that are into this hobby do, right? Like, we look outside and we go, that's nice, but what if?
What if there were dragons on the horizon?
Wouldn't that be cool, but also terrifying?
Yeah. So let's explore those feelings and dig deep into them and figure out, what is that world like?
Right. And then eventually you're like, wait, why do I care about dragons? What does this dragon represent?
Ooh.
Oh, what's my dragon? Oh my gosh. And it's my father, or whatever.
And then your brain just sort of implodes in on itself, and yeah.
Yeah, all jokes aside, I have a wonderful relationship with my father. Anyway.
I'm very glad you do.
Oh, dang. Okay.
Some of us aren't that lucky. So I'm actually genuinely pleased that you do.
I appreciate that. But I think everyone's relationship with somebody is complex, right? We all have that wicked stepmother in some regard, right? Like they look different, they sound different, but there's always that one thing, right?
And, yeah.
And I, you know, we use fantasy to escape, but also sort of in a roundabout way deal with, you know, the things that are bothering us.
Yeah. I was doing an interview the other day for a podcast that I might be a guest on, but like a one-time paid thing. We'll see how that goes. But the first, like, getting to know you question that they asked was, if you had to give a TED Talk, what would you talk about?
And what did you answer with?
I said the intersection of mental health and tabletop role-playing games. And then I went into detail explaining, like, people being able to explore gender identity or sexual orientation, or revisiting problems that you had previously, but now you can, like, have some distance from them because it's your character going through them. So yes, you can have a different perspective on it and be like, oh, X, Y, and Z went like this. And I think that that'd be a fun thing to do a TED Talk about, because there is more. I mean, I remember Spike talking about doing training for, like, counseling with TTRPGs.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think it can provide a lot of that. One of the big challenges is that you are in a therapy session with a group,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're doing it that way. And I think that might be part of why people sometimes get bent out of shape during games, because they are looking for a certain kind of catharsis.
Yeah.
Some sort of experience that they're having difficulty laying hold on, and then the person next to you needs something different. Right.
Yeah, and it's definitely a challenging balancing act, trying to wed those together. But when it all comes together, it can be magical.
You know, it's like people fight less over Monopoly, the most frustrating game ever, you know, than they do TTRPGs. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you still don't really care about Monopoly. You don't really care about the table. But, like, you can really start to care about what happens in this game. So, in these games,
yes,
I should say, because I, you know, they're like Pringles. I can't eat just one, right? So,
yeah, you got to try all the different flavors. You got to dip into a little bit of the Eldritch Horror with the Delta Green and the Call of Cthulhu. You got to go and unleash your inner thirsty with Thirsty Sword Lesbians. You got to try all the flavors. Dig your fingers into all of them.
I know. I'm a vanilla man. I will always love vanilla, you know. But yeah, no, there's a lot of good stuff out there right now. I mean, we have more RPGs now than we ever have, you mm-hmm. know. And one thing I'm seeing a lot with newer Dungeons & Dragons players is they're not really interested in it as a rule set. They don't. They use D&D as their term for role-playing game.
Yeah, it's like Kleenex for tissue.
Correct. Yeah, Kleenex, Coca-Cola, you know, any of the Tupperware.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, yeah, they say D&D. What they mean is role-playing game. In a lot of cases, they don't even know how the game is running. The GM doesn't know how the game works. All they know is D20. Was that a 15? Okay, probably worked then. Right. You know, like it's about all they know. And if everyone there is having a good time, I guess that's fine. Right. But I guess I need that other side of it. I like having my role play time and my tactical war game time.
Your crunchy time.
My crunchy time. I need a little bit of crunch, but I don't want my I don't want Pathfinder crunch. Right. So as yeah.
Have you had a chance to try out Pathfinder 2E?
I haven't played it except for as a video game.
Okay.
What was it, Wrath of the Righteous or whatever it was? Didn't care for that.
Fair enough.
It's just a lot of bloat, in my opinion. But hey, if there's a good GM out there for Pathfinder 2, I'm willing to give it a shot. But in the meantime, 5th edition plus all my BS works out fine for me, right? Like, Well, I definitely run 5th edition with an asterisk, right? You know, and I think a lot of people do.
Sure.
These days. And we pull things in from older editions, other games, that stuff we just prefer. You know, the players that we've gotten used to, we play around them. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I went to Ren Faire this last week with a guy. He said he was involved in 6 different games. I was like, I'm not even involved with 6 different games. Imagine trying to get 6 different groups together.
I've done that.
I know you get involved, yeah. But you also doing a show, right?
Well, yeah. There was a time, though, like during the pandemic, where I was involved in like 9 different games at a time. And only a couple of them were stream or podcast games. The rest of them were, I am going to go absolutely knucking futz if I don't do something with people and I can't be near them. I can't touch them. So we're going to go into Fantasyland and beat things up.
Oh, yeah. And I think it really exploded during that time.
It did.
So what I want to do with this episode and with probably the next couple episodes is really kind of take all that fun chaos magic that we have when we get excited about running a game like this, and not to get rid of that fun, but to temper it, right? Mm. To provide some temperance, to provide structure, because we know that the fate of most role-playing games is to fizzle.
Yes. And usually in the first 4 to 5 sessions.
Yeah. And I am not a fan of the one shot that much, except for that one you ran with Honey Heist. I was definitely into that. That was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
But that was also a very simple game. And yes. And that worked for me. D&D is a one shot. It's not my favorite thing because there's so much in there, right? But anyway, so what I want to do is create a campaign with you.
Let's do it.
And by extension, the audience, right? And so I have a document that I have put together. I use it for my students to provide them a project to plan out an entire campaign, right? Now, when I say the word campaign, that is a loaded term.
It is.
Right? When I say campaign, what are the things I'm inferring with that?
I think for me, I immediately picture I hear campaign and I hear big epic story. Yes. Where it's like levels 1 or 3 to 20, like big story, big themes, big ideas. And you're absolutely correct. That is immediately intimidating.
Yeah, it's an immediately intimidating word. So, you know, when we embark on that campaign, we want to see it to completion, mm-hmm. if we can. But that's not easy because a lot of reasons. One, schedules.
Scheduling is the baby aging, always.
Two, life.
Yes.
Three, player attitudes. Okay? And I include the GM in that.
Absolutely. I mean, the player, the GM is also a player. So, yeah.
But I would say, most of all, I would say the biggest problem, the biggest threat is the GM just completely losing motivation, right? And just completely losing sight of what it was they were creating in the first place.
And it's really easy to do because I'm still a very new GM, relatively speaking, relative to the other person in this call.
Although you've been kind of like speed running your experience with this game. Right.
I've been speedrunning, yeah, my entire experience with TTRPGs. I've been playing for a little over 6 years now, like 6.5 years.
But your 6 years is like everyone else's 12 years, right?
You know what it feels like. I mean, you know, expertise is supposed to come from hours put in, and I have put a lot of hours in.
Yeah. It's more about hours than it is about days.
It's very true. I was actually thinking about that when I was comparing Campaign 1 and Campaign 2 of Chaos Agents over on QNC, where it was like, Campaign 1, that was my second campaign ever. And like my experience was very different because I was still so very new. And then when we came into Campaign 2, it was after like the thrust of the pandemic, we were back in person. And I had been playing for hundreds of hours at that point. And I knew that none of the other players, with the possible exception of Matt, had been putting in that kind of time. And I'm not going to say I was a better player, because that's a wholly impossible thing to quantify. But I was very different as a player and didn't fit as well into that table anymore, mm-hmm. which was unfortunate because I love that table.
Yeah, your experiences may differ, right?
Exactly.
And in our growth with the game itself can differ wildly, where people that you used to be able to play with, you can't anymore.
Especially if you're like, I've been playing with Tanya a whole bunch, and our growth paths have been very similar in some ways, because I've been playing with her. I've been playing with you a bunch and learning a whole bunch from you. And I think you've learned from me, too, as we've been growing.
I learn from everybody I play with, everybody. I mean, even like students, people that are like career players, whatever. It's like there's so much to learn.
Yeah. But I still am a very new GM. I'm running my first like long campaign over on Q&C. I'm running Fendelver and Below, and hoo boy, do I have opinions on that module. But I have never been able, I tried to create my own, I've referred to them as homebrew campaigns. I tried to create my own very early on in the pandemic, and I was having anxiety attacks because of it. Because I was like, I want to do this thing that's a lot of politics. It's a lot of like, they were...
You have all these ambitions and goals.
I had ideas and goals and all of these thoughts and all of this stuff that I wanted to do. There was, like, they were slaves to a drow house.
Oh, cool.
And like, there was stuff that I wanted to do with that, but I couldn't ever like... dig deep enough to give them the experience that they deserved from that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, again, very new GM, and I ran away to pre-written modules and haven't poked my head back out since.
Well, it's good to get that experience as well, but, you know, now you also know the frustrations that come from learning someone else's game, right? Mm-hmm. And which is why I almost never do it, right? You know, I did Storm Kings. I've tried a little bit of, what was that first one? Horde of the Dragon Queen. Mm. You know, I did a little bit of Out of the Abyss. I ended up just completely changing Out of the Abyss into my own thing. You know, there have been a lot of things I've borrowed from. I've played in Curse of Strahd, at least, you know. So, like, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there, but... I don't think running it as like the gospel truth is the right approach. And it certainly isn't for me personally, because there are issues with story stuff and creating connections that you know that you need. But here's where I'll come to their defense a little bit. One, you know that these guys are under like horrible time pressure, right?
I do.
And when it comes to Horde of the Dragon Queen, 5th edition wasn't even done yet.
Oh, geez.
So they were just like, I don't know, a guy, I guess. You know, there's a thing over here. Yeah, that'll probably work out by the time the game comes out, right? They're like doing their best over here, you know. But what you have to understand, I think, is one, what do people generally want from the game? What do you want from the game? How does the story basically work? And how do I make my characters my protagonists? And then how do I build up all of these structures while also then being totally fine with it not happening that way?
Yeah. The story changes in the telling. The story always changes in the telling.
It is. So every time this curveball comes, you have a choice to make, right? You can either say, no, the ball curves back on track, or you can say, yeah, let's follow that track and see where it leads, and perhaps it will come back again,
mm-hmm.
right? But in the meantime, there are a lot of things you cannot plan for. And I think that you have to, number one, say to yourself, there is all of these plans are going to change. But you also don't want to not have plans.
Yeah, you have to have the skeleton to work with.
You have to have something to work with. You have to have a plan, because all of that is going to be lubrication for your creativity in that moment. If you go in and you go, well, a plan is just going to stifle me, It's like, yeah, but now your storytelling is going to feel flimsy, and I predict that your game will fall apart because you won't care about it.
Yeah.
And if you don't care about it, your players are not going to get hyped.
Why should anyone care about it if the person who, like, knows the stuff behind the curtain isn't excited about it?
Yes. So, and this is something I've been working on, this has been my personal goal as a GM, is at the very latest the next day, sitting down and actually taking meticulous notes on what happened and revisiting things. So, as a recent example, in our Westgate campaign, it was never my plan for you to get captured.
Right.
However,
that was a big curveball right there.
That was a big curveball. But I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to go on to the next plot point. But then this happened. And then I was like, okay, this is an opportunity. Let's use this opportunity. Tiana has a really good attitude about this. So this is going to work. And it's like the most exciting part of the game.
It's been like, even though I'm not playing my own character at the moment, I'm super invested in the campaign to be like, ooh, what's going to happen?
What's going to happen? Exactly. Because if you don't feel as a player like you have any control or any influence over the game, you're going to mentally check out. If you feel like you're doing the GM's work for them, very few players are going to enjoy that.
Yeah.
Right? Some players will enjoy that, but they're also GMs probably, right? And they should just do that or write a book, right?
Yes, exactly.
So, like, if you are a player, like, your class as a person is player, then, yeah, you're not going to be satisfied with that either. So you have to have both, right? Okay, so anyway, let's look at it. So in this document, of course, we have a title, right? And the title can come later. I like having a placeholder title that is basic. You know, this can be like Snakes on a Plane, right? If you want to, right? That's fine. Like, what is it basically? That can be your placeholder. You can do the poetic title later if you want to. Most campaigns are named after the location or after the villain, right? Or the central hub where things take place, right? So, like, Curse of Strahd. Okay, it's about Strahd. Got it.
Yeah.
We know there's a curse behind it. Tomb of Annihilation, guess what? It takes place in Tomb of Annihilation.
Yeah, Phandelver and below, you know that it has to do with the Lost Mines of Phandelver and the environs below.
Right.
Eventually, so, somehow.
I would recommend staying away from titles that sound like Requiem of the Destiny, you know, or some BS like that. This is really pretentious. Like, I'm going to tell a really deep story here because you're going to get really excited about that. And you're going to be like, oh, man, it's going to have this and that. And there's going to be all these red strings everywhere and all these branching storylines and blah, blah, blah. You are going to overwhelm yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not going to be able to track your strings. And the one thing you're going to want to do is start over. And you're going to be like, how can I get back to session zero as quickly as possible?
Yeah. Set all the strings on fire. None of it is as interesting anymore because if you get all tangled up and it doesn't turn into a sweater, it turns into a knotted mess.
The thing is you cannot write this story by yourself.
No.
Right?
And nor should you try.
Nor should you try. This is the problem. Like, you can't approach it like you're Shakespeare, right? Because Shakespeare has control of everything that happens from start to finish, as long as the queen's all right with it, right?
Yeah.
So, but for you, you are, this is collaborative. This is interactive. This is us together doing this together, right? And so you have to create those things, but don't get too tied up. This is why, like, location or character as a name is fantastic, because that it can mean anything you want. It's like McDonald's, right? McDonald's is anything you need it to be, right? So Westgate, guess what? It's about a campaign that happens in Westgate.
Yeah.
What do we know beyond that? Nothing. We know nothing.
You get nothing.
You get nothing. Good day, sir. Okay.
Although Wrath of the Scorned was a little bit more on the poetic side, but you do kind of expect that though from like a Greek themed campaign. Yeah. You expect more of the poetic Edda type of thing.
Correct.
Mixing cultures there, and I don't care.
And I knew specifically who was the Scorned and why their wrath existed. And so, and like you guys picked up on the title meaning pretty much right away, right? Like,
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
We've talked about this. I didn't really realize that the meaning behind it until we were facing Hephaestus, and it was like, oh. No, Spike got it almost immediately. Yeah, I didn't.
He was like, we will do the Wrath of the Scorned or whatever.
Yep.
But he said it just like that. And I think I ended the session on that line or something.
Something like that, or very close to.
And that was a really cool moment because, yeah, it was the one who was scorned was Hephaestus by Aphrodite, and he's upset about it. This is what you're going to be doing, right? So, yeah, no, you kind of got me there. But I would say if you don't know how to start, location, right? Mm-hmm. As a different meaning in business, but you know what I mean. Okay. Campaign theme. This is the thing that nobody thinks about and they need to.
Everyone should think about.
In fact, I have you repeat it a couple of times in this doc just to keep it in mind. So When I say the theme, a lot of people will start to answer with the plot. And that is not what this is. The theme is, what is your story about? What is the meaning that your story delivers? In a phrase, what is your story? Okay? So, I'm going to put it to you.
Oh, okay.
No pressure, but...
All of the pressure.
But, Tiana...
Uh-huh.
What do you want to say with your art?
I want to say that... All right, we're going there. The way that the powerful use religion as a means of control is bad and should stop.
Okay, so we can definitely start with that. We can make it more eloquent as we go, but absolutely that's a good place. We have to deal with our religious trauma.
Yep.
If you're playing this game, you probably have it.
At least a little bit.
At least a little bit, right? And you are going to be... exploring that sort of power and the different ways that it afflicts people, because it's not just one thing, is it?
Mm-hmm.
People need to learn to think for themselves again. They have to be comfortable dressing the way they actually want to express themselves the way they want to love who they want to be able to exist outside of the doctrines and dogma. That is the real difficulty. That is a huge transition period.
There's also enormous.
The period of hard rebellion, you know, where we make an ice castle and sing Let It Go, right? And that happens right after. Then, of course, you can get into the other things like actual abuse that can occur within these power structures. You can talk about their corrupt business dealings and, you know, the money changing and all of these things. And so now that you have the theme in mind, now you can see, okay, if I explore the theme, here are all these different scenarios and quests that I can build that help on that theme, right? And you need that because if not, you're going to have a bunch of things that happen.
Yes.
They don't feel like they mean anything, like they're not connected in that way.
Yeah, there's no plot. There's no reason. It's just a series of going on a series of side quests.
Correct. And side quests are like my least favorite thing ever, right? I don't like side quests because it seems to infer that the quest is inconsequential.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine for a video game. Because I like to hit my buttons and I like to kill the guys and I like to try out the build. And so for a video game, I'm fine with it. But for an RPG, if I know we're going to spend a session doing something that doesn't matter, I'm not going to be happy about it. Right. I want everything to be, you know, progression, progression, progression.
You want it to matter in some way, whether it's advancing the world or the characters or helping underline a theme, then yes. it needs to have some purpose to it. And then it's not side quests necessarily.
Right.
It's not the main story quest, but it is something that helps underline how important this aspect of the world is.
100%. 100%. That's exactly right. Right. So, yeah, if it's like a side quest in quotes, but we're again exploring that hey, the church is, you know, church plus power equals bad.
Yeah.
Right. You got to keep them separated. Right.
Yeah.
When that happened, now we can tell these little stories and have these little vignettes and have them matter to you. Right. Okay. So that's good. That's the most important thing. All right. You could almost just go design now. Right. Now, the next thing I ask for is the synopsis. So this is our brief summary of the story and broad view of the gameplay features. So this is kind of where we can get a little bit more plotty.
Sure.
Right. But since you have that theme, you can now think of the different elements of the plot that you want to exist. Okay. So we might have someone who is being indoctrinated. We might have another thing where there is a ritual sacrifice. There could be another thing where there is a secret ceremony that occurs that the person undergoing it is feeling invaded and powerless, right? We can have another one where someone is cast out by their family for not conforming to the faith. We can have the overzealous paladin who's out to smite the wicked, but really the wicked's just somebody that made a mistake.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all of these little elements are now popping into our mind because we have this. Okay? So, once upon a time, you know, five adventurers get together in order to blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay? So, that's a synopsis.
Yeah. And that's honestly the part that I find hard to do, because I find it hard to condense the big ideas down into once upon a time.
Yeah, it really can be difficult. And you know what? You're going to go back through and you're going to change these.
Yes. And that's very true. Like, none of these are like carved into stone tablets to be handed down from Mount Sinai.
Right. And even the ones from Sinai, he threw down on the ground and broke and then went and rewrote them.
There were three copies of it by the end of it.
He had different drafts. They were like, yeah, it's pretty good, but you got like a run-on sentence here. And he was like, ah, these idiots. I hate these guys.
You've got to be very focused in how you lay down the law.
I just said no idols. Is that a cow? Did you make a big... Why did you make a big cow? What are you doing, guys?
We thought you were dead, man.
I am literally going to be an old man that goes and yells at a cloud somewhere. So, anyway, the synopsis we can come back to right now. Don't worry about getting it perfect. Right now, just write something like, our adventures explore the fallout of a theocracy that is coming apart at the seams. That is collapsing under the weight of its own power.
I like that.
Right? They have to travel throughout the land, saving people from their savior.
Yes, before, I'm writing this down.
Before being captured by the Inquisition.
Hmm.
I think that's fine, right? We can start there. We can refine more later. If you want to write something different, write something different. But that's kind of where I would start. Sort of like a Holy Roman Empire is too big to succeed.
Yeah. What I wrote down, it was actually just the beginning of what you said. The adventurers are exploring a theocracy that is coming apart at the seams.
And that works too.
Just like focus in on that. Because, yeah, we can get more in depth on that later. There's a lot to play with there.
There's a lot to play with there. So I also want to talk about a broad view of the gameplay features. Like, what kind of game are we going to be looking at? And yes, in Dungeons & Dragons, there can be different gameplay features, right? For instance, are we exploring? Well, we literally just said it in the title, right? Yeah. So we know that there's going to be some exploration of the different lands. We know that travel is going to be involved in some way. Is it going to be hardcore survival? Maybe not. Maybe it's simple, but, you know, you still have to track some things, at least in the beginning. We know that we're going to be dealing with religion as a theme. So taking something like knowledge of religion is going to be useful.
The only time that my paladin will actually take knowledge of religion.
That's right. We might have to actually deal with outsiders, right? There might be celestials even that we end up fighting, right? Like, it's possible we could end up dealing with devils and demons. Undead could probably come up here. This is probably going to be a little bit less intense on undersea creatures, right? They're probably not going to come up.
Probably not.
We might not even deal with that many goblinoids.
Sure.
You know, we've already inferred some of those expectations. Dialogue, I think, in a setting like this is going to be important. So I would imagine if there's an inquisition involved, that there's going to be some degree of political intrigue. I'm going to have to lie a few times. You know, I'm going to have to hide people from the Gestapo, right? There's going to be a lot of inferences here as to how we're going to be playing this game.
Mm-hmm.
But other things you might consider are things like, are we going to have downtime? Are we going to have time skips? Are we going to, or is it just going to be like, go, 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 go? Are we going to have a central town? Are we going to travel from different towns to different towns? Are we going to bring our favorite NPCs with us, or do the NPCs not really matter? And like, it's just Joe the Smith and then Fred the Smith and then Mary the Smith and then, you know, so on and so forth. Right. Or do we get our guy and then bring them around with us? You know, is this going to be very combat intensive, or is this going to be like combat occasional? We do want to at least jot down some notes here as mm-hmm. to what our gameplay features are going to be. So, because again, when you're pitching this to your players, they want to know what they're in for. They want to know what they need to do. And some of them might be like, I really don't want to do political intrigue, man. I just watched the debates, and I just want to mash skeletons, man. I don't want to think thoughts anymore, right? And then you might be like, okay, well, maybe we'll go a little heavier on the dungeon crawling stuff. Okay, so any questions or comments so far about theme, synopsis, and gameplay?
No, so far it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you wanna know what the bounds are from the beginning. I remember for Wrath of the Scorned, I think you did this for Westgate too, or at least an idea of it. You sent out the Google Doc where it was like, what are you all looking for? And you built it around that, which I think is, like you said, this is a collaboration. I like the idea of, unless the GM has a very strong, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I think that's a really solid place to start, is be like, are you guys interested in exploration? Are you interested in just combat, 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 which will never be one of my campaigns, frankly, because
right, sure.
I don't, that then turns into combat for the sake of combat, in my opinion, and I don't like that. I never have.
Right. No, you want conflict, not combat.
Exactly. And I want combat to mean something. I want combat, like, when it happens, because it is the last resort.
Yeah, but side comment, quick and dirty advice for good combat is dialogue.
Hmm.
Like, there should almost be a dialogue action, like, per turn, right?
Like, I think people forget that talking is a free action.
Well, a brief
yes,
statement
not,
is a
not,
free action.
Yeah.
Like, a full-on intimidation check shouldn't be free, right? But, like,
sure. Yeah.
But you're right. You're right. And I try to make sure that villains say something pretty often, even if it's just like, you bastard, I'll get you for that, you know, or whatever. It's good to have that dialogue moving. Everybody looks at the fight between Fire Lord Ozai and the Avatar as like the gold standard example of how to run a fight with good drama, good conflict. Whereas I would say the worst example is like the Phantom Menace. You know, the,
oh,
episode one of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where it's like a cool fight, you know, like Darth Maul's like cool looking. He's flipping around. He's doing all kinds of cool moves, but it's just moves.
Yeah. Ditto with the fight between Count Dooku and Yoda in the second film.
Yeah. And then to a lesser extent, the fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan in Revenge of the Sith.
That one at least had dialogue and stakes, and you actually kind of cared about it because there was a relationship.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. So, but there was also a lot of flippy dippy.
And faffing about.
Faffing about. And we're climbing this hill while smacking our swords together for some reason. There's some very impractical things that happened in that fight. But anyway, okay. So, in several points of the document, I actually have these, like, templates for, like, just put a picture here.
Mm-hmm.
Put a picture here because you got to get your brain in the mode of thinking about it, right?
This is your mood board. It doesn't need to be, like, the final of whatever, of, like, your temples or your gods or whatever. It's just, like, this is to set the scene, to set the mood for you.
Correct. It's, like, go on Pinterest, steal a piece of art that you find there and just slap it right on, right? Just like, okay, this is kind of how the bird's eye view of the city might look, or this is how the mountains are, or whatever. Like, we're just trying to feel.
Mm-hmm.
If you go in and you make your official world map and you go back in and replace that later, great, do it, right? You can do that if you want. But make sure, by the way, aside from this doc, go on Pinterest, right? Or Canva or whatever you like. But go on Pinterest, make a mood board. Like, yeah. Do it. Seriously. Like, you want to feel this game. Since all my stuff is online, I do have a pin board for every campaign. And it's where I'm stealing all my portraits, right? It's like, I draw, but I don't draw that fast, right? Like,
sure.
I'm not about to make 100 drawings for a campaign, right? So I'm just going to like steal my tokens from people's artwork. I'm not selling it anyway. So it's fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, mood board. Then, okay. So here's where I'm kind of following the DMG a little bit. We're going to talk about core assumptions. Okay. So what are the rules of our world? Okay. So here's some examples. Magic is rare. Dragons rule every kingdom. The world is ancient. It could be there is a war between technology and nature. Druids run all the schools. I don't know what it is, right? Like, you decide. Why don't you, based on what we have so far, give me a couple of core assumptions. To use Dragon Age as an example.
Yeah.
One of the core assumptions would be magic is criminalized and strictly instituted.
That could be one of the core assumptions, or at least anything that is outside of the church. So anything, so maybe divine magic that is within the church is, encouraged even, but like sorcerers and warlocks and wizards are heavily regulated.
Okay, so prejudice against arcane magic.
Yeah.
Might be way, how would they feel about like druidic magic?
Oh, that is completely sinful. How dare you connect directly to the land? You're supposed to go through the church to reach God's creation.
That's correct.
God, so, goddesses, whatever.
Right. So you might say druidic magic is outright considered blasphemous. It's apostasy.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be, rooted out. So that's interesting.
I think that that's the case with warlocks as well, because you're making deals with entities that aren't gods.
Right. And it could get extra complicated on the one person that makes a pact with a celestial being.
That could be very interesting.
So, by the way, Warlock as a GM is my favorite class because it does all my plot writing for me, but I think I've said that before. But yeah, if somebody was like a fiend Warlock, well, that's easy to use because you're fighting against the church while also low-key proving it right.
Right. I didn't realize just how much this does tie into Dragon Age, but I guess that's been kind of on my mind because I've been playing through Origins lately, where one of the core conflicts is between what the Circle of Magi and the Templars believe about magic and what the Chantry says about magic. And while, yes, the mages are driven to horrible things by all of the pressure that's put on them, they're also kind of proving the Templars right by making deals with devils in order to escape what they're doing. And it's a horrible catch-22.
This is what I didn't like about Dragon Age 2 specifically, is that, like, in order to improve replay value, we got rid of any chance that the mages had any argument whatsoever, right? Yeah. Like, because the mages are just stupid, like beyond dumb in Dragon Age 2. 3 is a little better in that regard, but only in that regard.
I was going to say, I haven't gotten to Inquisition yet, and I never really got into it when I did initially play it. I'm hoping that when I come to it again, it'll be better, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's still some good things about Inquisition for sure, but I have a lot of problems. A lot of problems there. Okay. So, do you have any other core assumptions other than the church sucks?
I mean, of course the church sucks.
Are there a lot of mages, or is this a rare thing, or who is there an entity that enforces these things? Do parents give up their kids to the chantry? Are they found out? Is it bloodline related? How old are things? You know, just general world building. Here's a quirk, let's say, about my world.
I want to say that the church being in control of power is not new, but it's not as old as they might want you to think. So maybe within the last like 100 years they came into this kind of power. Like, they've always had influence ever since the church was established. But they came into, like, full power ruling over everything about 100 years ago. So it's still relatively recent. Like, there, if you have elves in your world, which is an assumption that we'll have to talk about.
Yeah.
If there are elves in your world, it's very likely that there are people who remember a time before the church took over.
Oh, that could be really cool. I mean, like, especially for, like, you might also say the people are very insular. Right?
Yeah.
They're very cut off from the rest of the world. Like, all the forests are forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you might meet those elves.
Yeah.
And then those elves might tell you stuff, and they might make you think thoughts.
The country might even be surrounded by, like, a border of forest that is, like, the Black Woods or whatever, that if you go into that, the big bad wolf is going to eat you.
That's
right. Like, the fairy tales about it are all about, don't go into the forest, you will be destroyed or taken.
Yeah, they bring drugs, they're rapists.
yeah. And some, I assume, are good.
Some, I assume, are good people.
Look, we do kind of pull a little bit from real life, but I do think that having the part of what makes religion work as a manipulation tactic is the abuse tactic of isolation.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Like,
it's a lot of what makes cults work specifically, that you cut someone off from their loved ones. But if you're surrounded by loved ones, like I grew up. Sure, we're gonna pull a little bit from Tiana's backstory. Let's do this. I grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska. I actually grew up in the hills around Fairbanks, about 8 miles out of town. And up in the hills, I didn't go to public school, so I didn't have a community at all outside of my family and the church. That was it. That was the only point of human connection that I had.
Right. So what else did you know?
There was nothing. And, like, my beginning to question everything, my deconstruction really began when I joined the theater, because I started to meet people who weren't like me. And then I joined the Society for Creative Anachronisms, and I met a lot of people who weren't like me. But they were wonderful and loving and accepting, and made me constantly question all of my assumptions, and then started giving me things to read, where it's like, hey, I would love your perspective on this as someone who is a church person, which is a really good way to make me start thinking about things, where it's like, no, I'm not going to tell you what to think. I want your perspective from what you already believe.
Right.
Which is a really smart way to do that.
So, you know, they say write what you know. And it's like, yeah, those kinds of thoughts and memories and those feelings that you had, Mm-hmm. You can absolutely leverage all of that because it's going to make it realistic. You know, we both of our backstories are trauma from different religions, right? Yep. And us dealing with this with these things, it took me a lot longer, I think, than a lot of people to exit because there were a lot of things that were benign about my experience, you know, and my parents are just, you know, generally good people.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and the power structures were also set up for people like you. Like you're a white cis man.
I mean, you don't have to say it like that, all right? But
sorry,
yeah,
no, the power structures were set up to boost you and people like you specifically, whereas people like me, even before I realized that I was queer, I was a woman.
Yeah.
And there were very specific restrictions that were put in place because of that. So I think one of the interesting things to examine in this fantasy world is what is the assumptions around genders?
That's huge.
It is. Because one of the things that I love about Dragon Age is that they even say very specifically in the character creator, there is no like real social difference between men and women because that's not what the Chantry teaches. The Chantry teaches that mages are the people who brought sin into the world, not women.
Mages are queer.
Basically. I mean, they flounce around in long robes all of the time. Of course they're queer.
Yeah, and in the third game is the first time they really bring up transgenderism. And but, like, being gay is, like, there in the beginning, like,
I do appreciate how much BioWare has brought queerness into, like, it was in Mass Effect and then it came into Dragon Age. I appreciate that about them.
Well, you know, they've had a huge impact. I mean, there's pretty much no RPG now that doesn't ask you what your preferred pronoun is, regardless of the genitals of your character. And a lot of games let you customize your genitals at this point.
Yep.
Right? It's kind of even, and it like never comes up, but you know, it's
something that lets you connect a little bit more to the world, which I love. Right. I think I kind of want to, like, because gender is such a thing for us as modern people, I kind of want to have, I don't think that misogyny or misandry should be like a systemic thing in this world.
Okay.
Like, you are not less because you are woman. You are not less because you are man. You are less because you are magic user. I want to crib that directly from Dragon Age.
Okay. And by, you know, the good artist steal, right?
Great artist steal a lot.
Yeah, great artist steal a lot. No, absolutely. Yeah, take as you need, right? I have, every now and then I've experimented with gender roles in like various cultures in a game. But yeah, I find most players don't really want to go there. So maybe in a generation or two, they'll want to again. But right now, I guess it feels a little bit too close to home for a lot of folks.
It's rough.
You know, because yeah, definitely gender roles are still very much a thing, even as we are trying to get away from it. But there's also a lot of pushback there. But again, a game is an interesting place to explore a lot of these things. Having said that, I also want to say, try not to be too preachy.
Oh, yeah,
with your game, right? Like
that's just boring.
That's something I have definitely done. That is a mistake I have made in the past where I was like, I want you all to explore my religion. I all want you to explore my politics, you know, that sort of thing, as opposed to, okay, but if I'm also exploring it, then I need to be willing to listen as well, right? I need to be willing to, like, an exploration is going to be, you know, two-sided in that way, right?
Not even two-sided. That's multifaceted because, sure, it's the players and the GM, but it's also 4 to 6 players with their perspectives and the GM all exploring their assumptions and expectations and figuring that out. And there's a lot of juicy stuff in there.
There's a lot of really good stuff. A lot of really good stuff. And again, as a GM, like, one of the most important things is just to be willing to learn yourself, right? Be willing to be surprised. Be willing to learn. Be willing to listen. Be willing to adapt. Be 100%. Willing to crumple up the thing you wrote and throw it away, right? I want you to write all this, but also I want you to think about being okay with it not being ironclad. right? Because if you do treat this as holy writ, then you will feel confined. You will feel restricted. So that's core assumptions. The next section I talk about deals with religion, politics, and economics, right? The unholy trinity. Obviously, religion is going to be a big part of this game, right? So let me ask you just a couple of questions. Are there other religions around? Do they exist? And can they compete at all with the main thing?
I think that there are what the church would call cults.
Mm-hmm.
that are suspicious at best and to be stamped out at worst because they're not following the one true religion. And I don't necessarily think that the religion is around like a singular God. Maybe it's like a threefold God type of thing,
right,
where it's like, you know, these are the aspects of these gods that we think are good and useful, you know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit type of thing. Maiden,
right,
mother, crone.
And one of the other ones could be like, oh, no, they're all literally one guy. And another one could be like, no, they're separate, distinct beings.
Yeah. And that's where you can get different factions within the church, which I love having like different denominations, so to speak. I think that that's something that's lost a lot in stories where there is a central church, because having those schisms are, I think, very interesting. I think that one faction of the church is the one that's in charge,
yep,
but there are other denominations, for lack of a better term, that are around. They're tolerated. They're put up
okay
with. Like, it's like the way that a lot of evangelical Christians look at Latter-day Saints as they're not real Christians.
Right.
But we put up with them.
You know, but, you know, we get invited to the barbecue, so we're
right
cool with that. You know, but whatever. Yeah, absolutely. So, and are there some that are just outright, like, that is forbidden, that's a cult, that's bad, we got to get rid of that?
Yeah, I think anything that doesn't follow that threefold god or goddess, mm-hmm, I mean, maybe there's, like, six gods that are at the core, three male, three female, that are,
cool,
you know, the equivalent of Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Maiden, Mother, Crone.
Right.
That are like the core of the church, and they all work together for the unity and harmony of the world. And then there's all of the other gods that exist, but are considered to be cults.
Like they're part of the cosmology, perhaps, but they're not worshipful.
Yeah, exactly.
Worshipping gods, let's say.
I mean, I'm drawing a little bit from even the Ten Commandments on this. It doesn't say there are no other gods. It says thou shalt have no other gods before me. It doesn't say they're not real. It says you can't have them before me.
Right. I'm number one.
Exactly.
I'm number one. Yeah.
And I mean, maybe
fascinating.
Maybe everyone still has like those little traditions that are just so old that they're just embedded deep into the soul, like throwing salt over your left shoulder when you spill some and things like that, that are too, like, if you ask them why they do that, oh, we've just always done that. But it started as the worship of some small god.
Yes. No, 100%. I think having little details like that is nice. But a lot of those details are actually going to come up in game, and
yeah,
you'll think of them in the moment.
Yeah.
And then the only thing I would say then is make sure you write down that happened, because your players will write it down and they'll think it matters, right? And so you've got to make it matter. You got to make it matter. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, I did that a lot after our last game of Westgate, where like the next morning I got up and like the first thing I did was pop open Roll 20, and I created a new handout for myself, and I started just knocking down stuff that happened, right? And like, okay, I said that this person had a name and this is what they did and this is, you know, who they were. And like half of those things I didn't plan, right? So
easily, because you didn't know what questions we were going to ask.
Correct. But I've also come to really enjoy not knowing, right? And going, okay, what characters are they going to make for me today? You know, and then just being able to go from there. Okay, so then, you know, politics, is this a theocracy? Do political organizations you know, you said there's some degree of religious tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they have differing values of political power? Are there parties? Is it, you know, still a monarchy? Is there pushback between church and state, or is church and state truly one unified thing? How does the military work in with that? You know, what is their relationship with the peasantry,
mm-hmm.
And the working class, right? Do we have guilds? But then that gets in a little bit more into economics. So, and just to kind of breeze through this a little bit, the economic questions are things like how is labor done?
Mm-hmm.
What is produced? Who's producing it? And who is it for? Right?
Yeah, and what's the trade situation? Especially because they're more of the isolated kind of country.
Yeah, and pretty much no country is going to completely subsist on its own output.
They can't. It's impossible, practically.
Yeah, they don't have the natural endowment, and so they have got to trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, once people get a taste of salt, they're not going to go back. Right?
No, never.
They're going to want that back. So you want to be a popular king, you got to make sure people are getting the salt, right?
Yeah.
And so what are we going to give up to do that? Well, we're going to raise a bazillion sheep and we're going to produce a lot of wool, whatever that is. You could look at every town on your map and you could say, okay, yes, they all produce multiple things, but here's the one thing they're known for, right? These are the cheese guys. This is the sheep guy. This is metal.
This is lumber. This is jewelry. This is, yeah.
And, you know, you can give everyone one or two. You really don't need to go much deeper than that.
Yeah.
Other than just like how are things produced, like, is there inequality? Is there, how wide is the gap between rich and poor? Is there a caste system?
Mm.
Is there anyone super wealthy, or is there not a lot of wealth to begin with, right? Or perhaps everyone's well-to-do, and there's a dark secret under that, right? So that's a possibility. It's like, yeah, everyone has everything they want. It's fine because we have all these secret slaves that live underneath the capital or whatever.
Ooh.
Right? So, or we literally use animate dead to do all of our labor.
I have seen that before, and it's actually not, like, especially if you know that that's what's going to happen to your body after you die. It's like, yes, I am continuing to serve my community, and I kind of love that as a concept.
However, then we're also, maybe we could say, it took 100 years, but we've been weakening the veil between the material and the shadow fell or whatever.
Sure.
Because
of all these
undead. Because we're doing this, right? So it's, yeah. A lot can be said about the economic conditions, and those can write your quest for you once you understand what the political, economic, and religious environment is that you live in. And you don't need these to be long treatises per section. Start with the broad strokes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It kind of just goes with core assumptions again. People are generally poor except for the nobility, right? That's easy. You know, you can say something like that. This is medieval European feudalism.
Right.
Got it. Okay. Everyone's last name is based on their occupation, right? Whatever it is. So that's about as far as I want to go right now because we've been talking a long time. But I thought that would be a good place to kind of stop and to take a break.
Yeah, there's a lot more to dig into. We're going to keep doing that for at least the next couple of episodes of Inspiration Point. So grab your notebook, settle in, folks.
Yeah, settle in. Although do not use the notebook if you are driving while listening.
No, just if you need to like make notes while you're listening, pause the episode and give yourself like a voice memo on your phone or something.
There you go. You know, but what has probably happened while you've been listening to this is your mind began to wander and you began to consider your own ideas,
mm-hmm.
and then you didn't hear the next 10 things I said until your brain came back, right? And that's fine. That's how I listen too, right? Like, but make sure that those ideas don't disappear into the ether.
Yeah.
Right? Try to capture them in some way.
As Dan Vashkevich says, it's not real till it's written down.
So true. So true, King. All right. Now then, why don't you take us home?
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us for this episode of Inspiration Point as we begin figuring out campaign planning and actually like diving deep into what the nuts and bolts of all of that look like. We hope that we're able to help inspire you to come up with your own ideas and spin off in a completely different direction. Like we started with my core assumption. You have your own core assumptions based on your own backstory. And I'm super interested to know what those all are. Feel free to join our Discord and tell us all about like what you want to plan and what campaign you want to do based on this sort of thing. Adam, how do you feel about making this campaign document available for folks in the show notes?
Yeah, I would be more than happy to do that if people are interested, or even if they're not, I can just throw it up.
I'll put the link to this document in the show notes so that folks can have a look and like follow along with us. I think that will help people stay focused in as they're making their own thoughts and ideas. And even if you're not planning your own campaign right now, this is a good thought exercise to like strengthen those creative muscles. So thank you all again so much for joining us. And until next time, stay inspired.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspiration Point. If you'd like to support what we do, go and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/inspirationpoint. If you can't support us directly, that's okay. You can also help support us by telling people about the podcast. A little inspiration goes a long way.
Inspiration Point is edited and produced by Tiana Hansen and is distributed by Quest and Chaos. If you like what you hear with us, give Quest and Chaos YouTube or Twitch channels a visit. They play Dungeons & Dragons on a weekly basis and have a bunch of campaigns of Call of Cthulhu, D&D, and board game playthroughs archived on their YouTube.
Join us next week for more inspiration.